Okay, good. Some echoing out the room. Yeah, good. So I got a lot of sleep last night. I'm feeling really strong for music night. Oh, I'm really not feeling the enthusiasm in the room. I feel really good about music night. Wow. Tough crowd. Tough room. I feel like a really bad comedian right now. So we're going to... What? Yeah, no sleeping, no sleeping. You think so? Doing a little Watusi? We are, oh, wow, you've got us live. Thank you, Kashif. Everybody in the world can hear me now. Thank you for that. So we have several folks today, as you can see on the agenda. Mary Wong from the non-commercial users constituency, who is running just a little bit late, as she said to me. So she will be here to speak about the NCUC, which is part of the non-contracted, meaning have no contract with ICANN, non-contracted constituency of the GNSO, Generic Name Supporting Organization. So Mary will speak to that. And then our outgoing CEO, Rod Beckstrom, will be here to see our fellows today. And again, we have a special place for Rod in our hearts because he has had a very special place for fellowship in his. So we're very happy that he could find time to come on his last week. And then we have the ICANN security team, along with Bobby Flam, who they have been, the security team has been coordinating with since about the Brussels meeting time. And they're going to talk about ICANN security coordination with global law enforcement, as well as cybersecurity. So I know that's a very hot topic for a lot of the folks in the room. So, you know, feel free. Jeff is very free-flowing in his talks. So he'll be really happy to take your questions, as well as the rest of the team. So the other thing tonight is, of course, music night. And all kidding aside, no one is under any obligation to follow me up on the stage. Unless, of course, you know, you don't want your spider and starfish book, or if you don't want me to smile at you for the rest of the week, or I don't know, maybe I'll cut off breakfast at the Intercontinental. Other than that, it's fine. Do what you wish. It's all good. So it's a lot of fun. It's a way to let loose after a really long day. In case we don't have the time at the end, since we have the time waiting for Mary, let's talk about the fact that it is Constituency Day today. So even when I do the welcome to ICANN, this is a difficult one for me to get anyone's head wrapped around and to really give them the direction, to give anyone the direction of exactly what to do or where to go. I mentioned this, I think, on Sunday, but some of the sessions are ongoing, from topics from Costa Rica, from topics from Dakar, from topics on their monthly calls. And sometimes you feel a little bit as if you're the late person to the party. So you have to spend that time on your computer, look up that constituency group, read a bit about them. Maybe you can get into their past, you know, monthly notes. Everything's transparent. It's all on the ICANN website when you go into the title called Groups and then pick the different constituencies and you can look at them. Reminder again that if it's not something that you are feeling comfortable with or feels really getting you where you need to be, just, you know, quietly pack your things up and head out. All the electronic monitors will be telling you where the other sessions are, or, of course, you've got your cheat sheet from the Newcomers Lounge and stuff. So feel free to roam a little bit, and especially if you just really don't have any particular bend towards intellectual property, towards the registries and the registrars, towards the NCUC, the GAC, the CCNSO. it's a good chance to treat it like a wine tasting, right? So just line all the glasses up and taste a little bit all along the way. What I don't want you to do is to walk out of the conference hall at 11 o'clock and say, you know, this is my day to kind of go shopping because there's really nothing much here for me. So remember again what we said on Sunday. You've come a long way. Your employer has invested in you. You have invested in yourself. You've committed yourself to being here and to learn everything you can. So though it may be difficult to get through any single session or a day, there's a whole ICANN website that you can sit in the room and go in and take some learnings. Remember, you've learned how to do remote participation. So you can go in, turn the volume off on your computer so that you don't squeak out or play out what's going on in another room while you're in a separate one, and just engage remotely to some other sessions. Okay, so I don't want to take any more of Mary's time up with my chatter. So, Mary, good morning and welcome. If you'd like the handheld, if you'd like to have a sit, it's up to you. And I've already just introduced you more or less, so I'll let you do it again for yourself.
Good morning, and thank you, Janice. Excuse me, I apologize for being slightly late, but I promise I'll catch up because I know that you've been sitting here listening to a lot of different people. I also know that I'm sure everyone that you've talked to has said this to you, that ICANN is a very overwhelming experience. There are a few things that we all learn very quickly. One is that you must know all the acronyms, all the abbreviations, and secondly, that you must accept that it is a very complicated mechanism. So I'm going to come talk to you very briefly about a very small part of this complicated mechanism, but I'd like to leave a few minutes over in case you have questions as well. I don't have slides because, again, you've been sitting here listening to a lot of people, watching a lot of slides. So what I will say about the Non-Commercial Users Constituency, or the NCUC, is that we are a part of the GNSO, the Generic Name Supporting Organization. I think our chair, Stefan Van Gelder, was here to speak with you a couple of days ago. Oh, he didn't? Oh, well, did somebody come? Ah, okay, well, that makes it slightly more complicated. Well, there he is. That is our chair. If you see him in the hallway, say, please, why did you not come to the fellowship meeting? Is the chart up on this website? If you scroll down, it's somewhere in the middle of the page, I think, or some page, somewhere. Yeah. I think it might be in the middle of this page, whatever that thing is. Oh, no. Yeah. Anyway, I'm asking Janice to... There you go, the multi-stakeholder model. Yeah. Oh, that was on the homepage. And I'm sure all of you have seen this chart, and it will be a challenge to be able to reproduce this chart without looking at it over and over again. But I think the biggest challenge, but the most rewarding challenge, is to get to know people from different parts of this chart. And I know it's a little small, but it's on the ICANN website. And like I said, NCUC is one of the constituencies within the GNSO. The Generic Name Supporting Organization is the body that basically develops all the policy that have to do with generic top-level domains. So as you can imagine, for the last 4 years, 5 years, it seems like a very long time, we have been dealing with the new GTLD program. It came out of the GNSO in 2007. There was a report that recommended the new GTLD program that was adopted by the board, and since then we have been trying to implement it. And I won't go into that because that's a substantive topic. But essentially that is a very good example of what in the GNSO we do. NCUC is basically the only group within the GNSO that, well, not the only group, I'm sorry. Let me back up one step. In the past, within the GNSO, we only had constituencies, as you may know. What happened a few years ago was that the GNSO was restructured into two houses, the contracted parties that contain the registries and the registrars, and the non-contracted parties that contain all the old constituencies and at least one new one that you'll hear from later. So all the constituencies were then reorganized into what are called stakeholder groups, because I think the one thing that you remember also is that ICANN is complicated because it is a multi-stakeholder bottom-up organization. So within the GNSO, the stakeholders are commercial and non-commercial. contracted and non-contracted. And for the non-commercial stakeholder group, there are two constituencies, NCUC, to which I belong, or my organization belongs, and NPOC, the nonprofit operational concerns constituency, whose chair will be coming to speak to you shortly. Oh, was he here? All right, so you met Alain as well. I think NCUC is very unique in ICANN, not just because it is a non-commercial-based group, but it is also unique because we are open to individual membership. What you may have realized from listening to some others is that you have to be part of an institution or a corporation or some entity, and you may participate as a representative of that entity. But it's quite rare that within the GNSO, you participate as an individual. So there are two types of membership in NCUC, organizational and individual. And our mix of members are actually quite interesting. We have a lot of academics. We have a lot of individual internet users. We have a number of civil society leaders. I think many of you are here partly because you're interested in matters pertaining to internet governance. And some of you may have participated in the IGF or other forums. Some of you will have heard about rumors, at least, that the International Telecoms Union, or the ITU, is trying to take over ICANN and the internet, or that governments are trying to take over the internet and make it a tool of the United Nations. That is a very interesting topic that is quite hot at the moment. Many of the civil society leaders, and you may have met some of them in the course of this week, are members of NCUC. So NCUC sees itself as the home for civil society within ICANN. And we feel that it is probably the only place where civil society really has an appropriate home. We're not registries. We're not registrars. We're not intellectual property lawyers. Well, at least I am, but I'm an academic intellectual property lawyer. And many of us don't run businesses. We may be employees of a business, but our interests in the internet are as individual users, as students, and as researchers. So if you're interested in what we do, and if you feel that your heart belongs with civil society, please come to our NCUC meeting today. The schedule is on the ICANN website. And with that, I think I would like to take questions if I have a few minutes, and if anybody has any questions.
Morning. My name is Biran. I'm from the Gambia. I just wanted to ask, what's the difference between the contracted and the non-contracted parties?
It's actually a very simple answer. I'm actually very happy when in ICANN you can give a simple, straightforward answer. All right. And the difference is because if you are a registry, like VeriSign or Afilias or Neustar, and you basically run all the top-level domains, let's say, the .coms, the .nets, the .infos, that makes you a registry. You have a contract with ICANN because there are issues pertaining to security, stability, financial issues. And similarly, the registrars, if you are selling domain names that you then put into a registry, like if you're GoDaddy or Enom or something like that, you too operate under a contract with ICANN. And that's what makes them contracted parties. They're accountable legally under their contract. For the non-contracted parties, like the intellectual property constituency, the business constituency, or us, NCUC, we don't operate under any kind of legal contract with ICANN. We are all here because we care, because we're interested, and we want to participate in the multi-stakeholder model. Does that help? You have a follow-up?
One more question. You are a non-commercial entity, so does that mean that your users have to work in NGO or something like that to avoid conflict, or could they be commercially working in commercial business or something?
That's a great question, and thank you, and I should have made that clear earlier. If you are an organization or an entity and you want to join NCUC, you have to be a non-commercial entity. Now, you could be a non-profit entity. It doesn't mean you can't make money, right? It doesn't mean that you survive on grants alone. It doesn't mean that you're just an NGO. Right? It could be, for example, I work for a law school and a university. My law school is actually a corporation, but it's a non-profit corporation like ICANN. So we qualify, but we run in the black, we don't run in the red. So you can't be a company making money off the internet in the sense of profits and so forth, right? Because then you should probably be in the business constituency. For individual users, generally the requirement is that if you have a domain name registration, it could be your family name, it could be an individual registration, it's very, very easy to satisfy because we feel that we want to have as many different and diverse voices as possible. I mean, I think if I can take the opportunity to add to what I said earlier, if you look at the NCUC membership, you'll see two things. One is that we are the fastest growing membership base simply because we welcome many individuals and many different types of non-commercial entities. But secondly, in terms of geographical and ethnic diversity, we have the best track record in ICANN for reaching out to different regions, different cultures all around the world, and we're very proud of that.
Was there somebody else?
This is Iftikhar from Pakistan. I am representing the government of Pakistan. My question is that it is also brought in the GAC and GAC members, especially the GNSO and CCNSO, did not vet and get the consent of the governments. The same question from you. What about your working group? How they get the government input?
So you're asking specifically how and whether NCUC gets government input?
Yeah.
And I can say that it's not different from the rest of ICANN. Has the GAC representative come in? Okay. So you're going to talk about the Government Advisory Committee or the GAC tomorrow. And that
because GAC is representing all the members of the government of the world worldwide countries.
Right.
And it is observed and it is noticed that GNSO and CCNSO especially did not get consent from the GAC, and they replied that to the GAC that as per the ICANN rules, it is not our SOPs that it should be vetted any, especially PDP from the governments. So my question is same that, what about that? How you get the consent and input from the government?
So I see that you've become very active in ICANN because I can count the number of acronyms that you used, right, including one called the PDP or the Policy Development Process. And as a GAC member, you know exactly what the role of the GAC is. So I don't need to tell you that, and
yeah.
I know that the GAC members are coming to talk tomorrow. What I will say for the benefit of everyone here is that the role of the GAC is different from the role of the GNSO. First of all, it's not just because it's an advisory committee, not a supporting organization, but when the GAC, as governments, give advice to the ICANN board, it is very formal.
Yeah.
And if the ICANN board chooses not to take GAC advice, it has to provide a reason. That's in the ICANN bylaws. Now, your question then pertained to, well, when we do policy work within the GNSO,
yeah,
what happens with the GAC, right?
Yeah.
One thing I will also say is that the GAC does not formally participate in the GNSO or the CCNSO policy development processes or PDP. The GAC says it cannot because no one member or two members of the GAC can fully represent the full GAC. So it becomes a bit of a problem because, as I think you know from your involvement, a lot of the policies that we develop, say, within the GNSO may have public interest implications for individual countries or for the GAC as a whole. Like in the new GTLD program, right? You're opening up the space to so many different types of words and participants. There's a question as to whether certain things might be politically problematic for certain countries. So what we do, first of all, at working group level, and the working groups can be cross-community, and I think Olivier is going to talk about another group in the community, the at-large and the ALAC. So different people from across the community can participate. The GAC, of course, is welcome. It's just that they choose not to, not formally. So we try to get input from the GAC informally. So some working groups, the GAC may have members on the working group, and they make it very clear that they're not there to represent the GAC, but they're there to provide input. As individual constituencies and stakeholder groups, it is also always open to us to go to the GAC or to individual GAC countries. And I'll give you an example from NCUC. One of the topics that is causing quite a lot of excitement within ICANN is the negotiation of the registrar agreement. And you had talked about contracted parties. and that's being renegotiated. And one issue is that law enforcement agencies are pressing the registrars to change some WHOIS issues. And that raises, for NCUC, a lot of privacy concerns, right? Who can have access to your registrant data? What kind of data? Is it your phone number? Is it your address? And we feel very strongly that those have privacy and human rights implications. So what NCUC is doing is trying to engage with individual members of the GAC, but also trying to engage with the privacy and data commissioners of individual countries so that they can provide a perspective and say, for example, well, this request is problematic, not just because it raises general concerns, but it's problematic because it doesn't comply with the law of the European Union, for example. So I hope that answers your question, yeah. That there are formal and informal channels to get participation from the GAC.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, my name is Maria Dolores. Being a different body from the ALAC and the ALAJ community, I wanted to know, how do you collaborate if you work together? You get information from each other. What is your working method?
I think that's an excellent question. I think it's great that Olivier is here. That is actually one of the things that we're talking about. So I'll start and maybe hand it off to you. First of all, the ALAC is, like the GAC, an advisory committee. So it has a different role within ICANN from the GNSO and from the constituencies within the GNSO. But we in the non-commercial group feel that we have a lot of very common interests with At Large and with ALAC. So there are a couple of ways that we've tried to do it, and I think we're going to improve. One is that each group has a liaison to the other group. So NCSG, my stakeholder group, not just my constituency, but my stakeholder group has a liaison to ALAC, and similarly they have one to us. They participate on the mailing list, they come to our meetings. We also have very regular meetings and discussions. In fact, we had one yesterday between ALAC and the non-commercials. And obviously, when there are issues of common interest, whether it comes from a working group or from the ICANN Board of Directors, we will try to work together for joint statements or to provide input. So it's not so much formal but informal, and there's a very clear recognition that there's a lot of overlapping interests.
Thank you very much, Mary. You actually said it so eloquently. I don't know if I can add anything to this, apart from just one thing that we often see as ALAC being able to comment on practically everything taking place on ICANN. We often see silos that each constituency, each part of ICANN just works in their room and doesn't talk to the people next door who are talking exactly about the same subject. So we really try to promote this cross-community discussion, and it takes place in formal meetings. It also takes place during the ICANN meetings, in the corridors, in the restaurants, and pretty much everywhere, even in the evening. I mean, tonight, the music night, I'm sure we're going to discuss some things. So it's a case of really being able to coordinate with each other, and it takes place at several levels. But yes, I'll give the floor back to you, Mary.
Actually, I think Janice is going to ask me to yield to you. So is that
an unscheduled performer?
Oh, he's unscheduled. Oh. Should I take a couple more questions, or is there someone waiting?
Yeah, we have two more minutes.
Why don't we take two quick questions? Please.
Gary Campbell from Jamaica, representing the government. If a registrant allows a domain name to expire, I assume that can happen. How is that matter treated? How is he able to regain the domain name? If it expires without being renewed, what happens thereafter? How is it treated?
So your question was, if a registrant, say an individual or a corporation or a non-commercial entity, it doesn't have to be any particular one, right, allows a domain name to expire so he or she or it doesn't renew, what happens?
Right.
So without going into specifics, obviously there might be an issue if the registrar, one of the contracted parties, allows that domain to be available to the general public and somebody else registers it. For the most part, if that's fairly legitimate, that there's not much you can do. But also, if you let it expire, most registrars will let you renew it. Right. It's just that if you renew it before the end of the initial term, it's usually easier, and some registrars allow you to do it automatically. So it does vary, but it gets problematic when there are some issues, either fraud or some technical problems that cause that. But if it's sort of in the general course of business, it's pretty straightforward. And Leon, right?
Yes, Leon. I am. I'm Leon from Mexico. I'm still wondering, as I was talking to you the day before yesterday, I'm still wondering whether I should be more inclined to join the NCUC or the IPC. I mean, I am far more fond of civil society than lawyers. I mean, that's an easy one. And
what about civil society lawyers?
I'm sorry?
What about civil society lawyers?
Well, that's my case. Lawyers? That's my case. So what's the difference between joining maybe the IPC or the NCUC? I think that it's clear that if you join the NCUC, you are for the civil society. And as far as I know, the IPC is like the more hardcore IP law side of the constituency. But still, wouldn't it be important to have a member in the IPC that tries to do something to push the constituency towards the civil society interests?
So that's a great question, and I'll try to keep it short, although there's a lot of things we can say. I think what I will do is refer back to some things that Olivier said, that it's very important in ICANN, and I think this is something that we encourage newcomers to do, to not fall into the trap of being in a silo, right? Only working within your own narrow group, whether it's a constituency or a stakeholder group or a committee. That has happened. It's tempting because so many things are going on. You tend to just talk to the people you know. So it has been true. I think I'll be honest and just say, you know, when you work in a silo, as has happened, then what might be an issue that could be solved with the help of a different perspective or a different community sometimes gets lost. So all you hear is maybe one side of the argument. So let me just say that whether it is a constituency or stakeholder group or a committee, it really is important wherever you belong to reach out to someone else. I will also say that I have very good friends within the IP constituency, the IPC. I work with many of them outside of ICANN on very different issues. I've worked with them when I was in legal practice, and I continue to work with them now as an academic because I do trademark law. So the relationships is the other point, right? Again, no matter where you are or where you belong, cultivate good relationships, cultivate good communication. So there is informal, right, communication and feedback between the groups. And I think that's very important. And in the GNSO, with the restructuring, while everybody is now in a stakeholder group, in a constituency, it can get very hard. But many of us keep trying. The last point then I'll make is, in specific answer to your question, at least I hope, is that one difference between the IPC and the NCUC is that the IPC's mission is narrower in some respects because the IPC represents intellectual property interests. For the most part, those are trademark owners. So you'll see that a lot of the issues that the IPC raises have to do with trademark protections. For example, in the new GTLD program, have to do with whether registrars are in compliance with their contracts with ICANN because they're allowing a lot of cyber squatting to go on within particular domains. Very important issues, but those tend to be issues of focus. Whereas for NCUC as a constituency and NCSG as a stakeholder group that houses the constituency, we think that our interests are much broader. Do we care about trademarks? Yes, we do. But we care about trademarks from both sides. We want rights holders to be protected adequately, but we want there to be balanced protection so that, for example, you don't have an over-aggressive trademark owner that's filing all these actions, and so you end up stifling freedom of speech, for example, or something that might be considered a fair use of a trademark is not acknowledged. But over and above trademark interest, we do have a number of other causes and issues that we care about that we bring to ICANN. So I think we have a much broader array of interests, including balanced trademark interests. So to that extent, if you go to some of the meetings, I think you'll see that reflected in the discussion. And like I said, with civil society, our home is in the non-commercial group, but we do try to talk with some of the other constituencies who may have, frankly, more commercial interests that they bring to the table.
Mary, thank you so much. As usual, we could spend a whole other hour with you because of your breadth of knowledge within ICANN. We do need to wrap up. If there are any other questions for Mary, and I think there were a couple, you can go through my address or Mary, if you don't mind me sharing. I can share Mary's email address so that you can follow up with her and set a time with her this week for a one-on-one if you'd like to find her to ask the question personally or use her email address to do that. You can add one more thing, because I was going to actually ask you to clarify for everyone here Leon's dilemma. Can someone actually belong to two constituencies at once? And then we'll wrap this up.
Okay. The answer is yes, with conditions. So, again, because we want to encourage participation, there's not a whole lot of structural limitations over how you participate or where you belong. Each stakeholder group and constituency has its own charter and has its own rules for who can be a member. So that's condition number one. Condition number two is that even if you're a member of two groups, the general rule is you cannot vote in both groups for obvious reasons because then, you know, you can game the system. So with those two limitations, there's usually not that many other restrictions. I hope that answers the question. And as we said, you know, you are encouraged to come to some of the meetings. I will say that it might get a little just, you know, technical because people get deep into the issues and as someone coming new, you're like, what's going on? But the NCUC and NCSG as a big stakeholder group, therefore NCUC and NPOC, we're very interested in outreach, in having new membership. And I think you'll find that we're very welcoming. So if you would like to not just come to our meetings, but, you know, think about joining us. Please send Janice or me an email. We do want more participation, but we also don't want fellows to come here, get a bit of a taste, and then go off to their own lives and not actually dig in and participate in ICANN. So if there's anything we can do in the non-commercial site to help it, help you make it easier, please, please let me know. We would very much welcome your participation. Thank you all very much.
Once again, Mary, thank you so very much. Have a great day. And I feel like I'm looking back at the lineup, and now I choose the security team. But Olivier, if the security team would like to give you a couple minutes, I look at Jeff. Sure. Olivier, would you like to have your 2 minutes in the sun?
Thank you very much, Janice. I'll just introduce myself whilst you load the slides. I'm Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. I'm the chair of the At-Large Advisory Committee, which is the part of ICANN that is supposed to bring forward into the ICANN processes the views of the individual internet users out there. So that's 2.1 billion people, 2.2 actually. Now, every time I do this presentation, there's a few more that have, a few hundred million more that have arrived. We basically are a part of ICANN that doesn't actually make the policy. That all takes place in the GNSO. But we are here to comment on things. So because we're an advisory committee, we can comment on every single event, anything that basically takes place at ICANN or that is ICANN-related. And we have actually also produced comments for events or for things that ICANN was doing outside of ICANN. But it has to be related to domain names. It has to be it has to be related to the mandate that ICANN has to run the Internet's unique identifier system, as it's called. The difference between ALAC and most other parts of ICANN is that we are actually divided into regions. So first, I think we can... It's loading. Okay, excellent. So we're dividing into regions. We have five regions at ICANN, and so for each region, we have a regional at-large organization. And it is a little difficult to explain without the diagram, so because I usually point at that point, and of course there's nothing to point to. But and so because the reason why we are dividing in five regions, okay, here we go. That's the multi-stakeholder model here. So this is at large. Here we are. We're one of the advisory committees. There's also SSAC, RSSAC, and there is the GAC, of course, the Government Advisory Committee. And the at-large community has one director on the board of directors. But we have to remember that the people who are on the board of directors are supposed to act in ICANN's best interest, not in their own community's best interest. But because we have selected that person, it is fair to assume that the person has pretty similar views to our views, since otherwise we wouldn't have selected them to go on the board. So that's how we fit in the overall ICANN multi-stakeholder model. Okay, do we not have the diagram there? Picture a map of the world, and each region is somehow a little bit separate from the others. So we've got the North American Regional At-Large Organization, NARALO, the Latin American and Caribbean Regional At-Large Organization. Oh, of course, you've got the you also have the brochures here. So, okay, fine. I didn't see that they were being distributed so quickly. If some of you don't have any, then we can sort of pass them around. So we got LACRALO, we've got URALO, the European one, we've got AFRALO for Africa, and APRALO, which is the Asia Pacific Island and Australasia Regional At-Large Organization. And the reason why we have all of those different regional at-large organizations is that we want to bring as many people in the discussion, as many people in the input, if you want, to the ICANN processes. We want to be able to reach people all around the world. And in order to do that, it's better to actually have a process where first things take place at a regional level. One of the main reasons being that the Earth is round. So if you do everything on a global level, for some people, a conference call will be right in the middle of the night or right in the middle of the working day. So it's better to have these regional at-large organizations to coordinate things locally. Of course, on top of that, we have a thing called the At-Large Advisory Committee, and that's the committee of 15 people, which are made up of two people selected by each region and one person for each region of the world selected by the nominating committee. I don't know whether you've already had Vanda Tumar. Okay, so the nominating committee is just outside of the ICANN space, and they just select people and put them in various parts of ICANN in a sort of semi-independent way. So that means three people per region, and three times five is 15. That's the ALAC. There's often a misunderstanding between ALAC and at-large. At-large is the whole community. ALAC is just the committee itself. And the committee itself selects one chair, and that's myself, and selects also a director, a board director, that is on the board of, on the ICANN board. So that's how we work. As far as policy input is concerned, a significant part of our time is responding to public comments that are being asked in the ICANN model. So basically, a public comment comes out, we issue a request for comments from our own community, and at some point in time, hopefully within 3 to 5 days, someone will say, yes, we really have an interest in this. Somebody will be designated to hold the pen. They will write a first draft with input from the community that will be put on a wiki. Then there is a comment box underneath, and we encourage that we publicize it. We encourage everyone to bring their comment in there. And a few days later, 5 to 10 days later, we write a second draft based on the comments that were brought into the comment. And from that point onwards, the second draft, sometimes there's a third draft. This is all in theory, by the way. And then we have a final statement, which then gets voted on by the At-Large Advisory Committee. So that actually ratifies the statement, which then gets sent either to the public comment or directly to the board, because we are able to write directly to the board if we feel very strongly about an issue. We're able to write to the chair of the GNSO council. We're able to write to pretty much anybody at ICANN if we think that something needs to be done. I just told you this is the theory. In practice, it's a little harder because the world happens to have many languages. So not everyone is very proficient in English. They might take more time to read. Some parts of the world have less English proficiency, so the comments and so on might have to be translated in the local language as well, and for the input to come in. But in general, we managed to stick within a 30-day period to bring our input in. And that's pretty much how it works. We can also make comments totally outside of the public comments. We're one of the only organizations in ICANN that is able to actually comment at any time on anything. So that's it. I'm running around most of the time doing 10 things in one go, but if you do stop me, then I'll be happy to spend a couple of minutes with you. I've seen several of you yesterday and the day before, and I'm supposedly quite approachable, although if you do come close to me and I'm running, try and move aside so I don't knock you over. But thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Not bad, really. Thanks. So great. Thank you again very much. If there's any questions, I'll be sure to gather them and get them sent to you. Promise. Sternish, your biggest fan. I know, a fan base. It's amazing. They follow him everywhere. Gentlemen, if you would like to step up here, you can take a walking mic. You can take a seat at the mic, whatever you're comfortable with. And as we talked this morning, we have with us Patrick Jones and Jeff Moss from the ICANN security team. And, of course, Bobby sits in front of my breakfast, so now I may not get that. And Bobby Flam, who has joined us, and Bobby said, what would you like me to say? And I said, everything you say is going to be interesting because, this is a hot topic from all of your or most of your online applications to learn more about ICANN security, cybersecurity, and the role of law enforcement, global law enforcement with ICANN. So what I'm going to have these gentlemen do is just introduce themselves and a little bit about how they got to the place of sitting here in ICANN in the community here at this table, a little bit about the idea of ICANN's role in cybersecurity and law enforcement, and then the majority of the time really is about opening up to some questions from you because I know you have them. Gentlemen, Patrick or Jeff, if you'd like to start off.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Jeff Moss, the Chief Security Officer for ICANN, and it was kind of a long, twisted road how I ended up at ICANN, but I'm here now. That's all I care about. It's a fascinating organization. In a previous life, I did a lot of computer security conferences and training, and there you're essentially representing security researchers and the community and what people want to do. In ICANN, it's like that, but on a much larger scale. And you have to accommodate many more people and their interests. And at ICANN, it's also an interesting organization because in the security department, there's areas where we're very operational. Think maybe like operating the L route, watching over our own internal systems and servers. And then there's areas where we're collaborative, where we're working with other people. Maybe we're working with law enforcement to help them understand who is policy or how to make sense out of some log file related to ICANN. And then there's areas where we're just purely collaborative, right? They want us in the room just to get our perspective. And so we're one of the groups at ICANN that sort of has three different roles. And depending upon who we're talking to and what the subject is, we wear different hats. And so it's usually pretty useful to remind people, okay, we're collaborating. Oh, no, wait, we're operating. And to let people know what your perspective is. So we can go into more depth about that. But when you talk about the security team at ICANN and our collaboration with other law enforcement, or we also, there's another group called the Operational Security Community, and those are people that aren't law enforcement, but they operate large chunks of the Internet, or ISPs, or they're security researchers, or we participate a lot with the Anti-Phishing Working Group, or the Malware Anti-Abuse Group, or the Botnet some of the other groups that chase around botnets. And so it just depends on how we interact with them. And so we might be a little bit larger or a little bit more diverse than what you originally thought. And I'll let Patrick talk a little bit more about how that actually happens on a day-to-day basis.
So I'm Patrick Jones, Senior Director of Security at ICANN. I've started at ICANN in 2006, but I've really been involved and active in the community since 2000. I'm probably one of the rare staff members who's jumped around and had different roles. So I, while I'm in security now, I started out as registry liaison, involved in the nominating committee, the IDN fast track, some involvement in the development of the applicant guidebook, and oh, yeah, well, so the collaborative and consulting effort not only is for the community, but also internally, too. So that's one of the unique things about our team is that we do play a hybrid role of where we're subject matter experts both internally for the organization, but also outward-facing with the different aspects of the community. And, you know, from where I am now, that's one of the things that's most enjoyable because our team is really a bridge between the technical community, the law enforcement community, the business and non-commercial groups, and the other operators. So we're here to facilitate, collaborate, engage, and also listen.
And Bobby, would you just like to introduce yourself and how you came to sit with these two fine gentlemen here at the table?
Sure. My name is Bobby Flame. I work for the FBI in the Operational Technology Division in Quantico, Virginia. I first became involved with ICANN in about 2003 when there was a Who Is issue, because the Who Is a digital tool that the FBI uses and actually all law enforcement uses to begin a lot of its cases. So I realized when I came to ICANN that there are a lot of very rich opportunities to meet a lot of people that were here, not only the ICANN community, but we have the registrars, the registries, started working with the security team here, a lot of very good people that are more than willing to be very helpful. And if you're working cyber crime, you know, the biggest thing is to network and to know as many people as possible in the community so you can easily pick up a phone that will further enhance your investigation. So that's how I started here at ICANN. And over the years, we actually started to have more and more law enforcement that came to ICANN. We have law enforcement right here from Mauritius, my buddy Narayan. We have the United Kingdom here, Canada, you know, Denmark, Sweden, you know, Argentina, Brazil, Japan, Korea, South Africa. Everyone really has been here or have come through the doors at one point or another. And it really is a very collaborative effort. It's a great networking opportunity. And we've met a lot of other groups or internet organizations through here, such as the regional internet registries, which allocate the IP addresses. We've started making good friends at the Internet Engineering Task Force, which is the organization that does all the internet protocols and parameters, which obviously is very important to this internet and cybersecurity. So we've met a lot of great people. It's been extremely beneficial for us, great network opportunity. ICANN has been very, very nice to us. They host us. We've had many meetings here. We've worked on what are called the law enforcement recommendations through the GAC, which is the Governmental Advisory Committee. So it's been a very, very good opportunity, meeting a lot of great people, and it really has helped our investigations and the work that we do. So that's all I have to say.
And with that, I'll open for any questions. There's nothing that can't be asked.
This is Iftikhar from Pakistan. Pakistan is in the process of drafting the internet and email security policy. I need your guidelines. What are the key points which should be covered in that internet security policy? The whole committee, who is responsible, who is able to answer this question?
Well, I can only speak for ICANN as an organization. You know, when we build our email security policy, it's directly related to our needs. And since we're such a transparent and open organization, we have a very non-restrictive email security policy. I'm not sure in your specific case you would adapt it to
actually
your needs.
to avoid the security threat through which income from the internet, especially, yeah.
So I'm sure I'm not really understanding the question. Are you curious about the threats that come through email?
Actually, every government has a policy, and we are in the process of drafting the security cybersecurity policy. How we secure our information, our networks.
For your country or just for your government?
For our country.
So in the United States, that's still a contentious issue. They're still debating what the role of the ISPs versus what will be mandated to the ISPs, what versus what the ISPs themselves will do, what customers are responsible for. So I don't think we have a good answer for you because the issue has not been resolved. Sorry if that's not a very satisfying answer.
Yeah, If I may, I think the question, is it about the law of the country or is it about the policy you are talking about? Because I think if you are looking at national level, that it is rather the law that you are talking about.
Actually, there are some general guidelines which may be followed from the developed countries which they are adopting, because ICANN is more concerned about the cybersecurity, and they have some sound work on this. In this regard, I have some suggestions from this group.
If I may add also that there is a convention on cybercrime that you may also refer to, the Budapest Convention, that are a lot of provisions. So if you do have a Computer Misuse Cybercrime Act or something like for cyber, in your country, or even you can just look at that convention also. There are a lot of provisions, and this may help. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Azim from Pakistan. I have a question. As an individual, how can we participate in security-related issues and activities here at ICANN?
So a really good example is right now, our team publishes every year our fiscal year security, stability, and resiliency framework. So we're one of the rare teams that says each year, here are the activities and programs that we're going to do, and we post it for community comment and consideration. So that's a document where either in your individual capacity or wherever your organization is, if you're interested in providing feedback on those priorities and programs, maybe you have an idea or a suggestion for us to put more emphasis on one program over another. Another thing that we have out for public comment through the middle of July is a high-level draft statement of ICANN's role and remit in security and stability and resiliency. And this is this comes from recommendation one of the review team under the affirmation of commitments that just completed their work right before this meeting. And at a high level, that says, here's what we think ICANN's technical mission is, here's what we think our roles and responsibilities are, what we do and we don't do. But it's just a draft. So if you have opinions on that, we really want to hear those. And that's a starting point.
So you want to mention that?
Another committee that they have here at ICANN is called the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, and it's made up of many members. I think it's 38 right now. And they address very specific security issues in on the internet and cyber. So that's another good avenue too. Security, it's called, it's ESAC, but Security and Stability Advisory Committee.
So anybody can take part in it?
One of our alumni, Dr. Samad Hussain, as you well know from Pakistan, is on the ESAC, and I think he's your best link to talk more about that. But you are invited onto that advisory committee, as he was. That just shows exactly that it can happen, because he just became part of the ICANN community at the New Delhi meeting in 2008 through the fellowship program. So it's possible, and I think we should engage him to talk about that more. And then I'm going to look over to my right. And Ali, can I?
Ali Al-Mishal from Bahrain. With regard to the cybersecurity and cyber law, I don't know if ICANN are coordinating or cooperating with the other related bodies in that sense. Like, I have attended maybe more than 10 conferences and sessions, all with regard to the cybersecurity and cyber law. The UN having a number of subcommittees under the UN, like the ISIQWA, other ODBC, they call it UN-ODBC, all of them are looking on the cybersecurity, looking onto the cyber law, and especially in the Middle East, they are looking on developing the law of the internet and the law of the cybersecurity and cybercrime. So I don't know what's the role of ICANN in all of that. Thank you.
So since ICANN is not we're not a treaty organization and we're not a sovereign country, we really can't make law. So our role is not, we're not out there actively trying to stop criminals. That's not what we do. What we try to do, though, is operate with excellence the key components that we are responsible for, you know, the unique identifiers. In our case, LROOT, one of the root operations. We'll participate and provide advice if we're invited in to, say, the OECD conversations and explain to them how the ecosystem works and explain to them who the players are and what their motivations are and what is possible maybe to regulate and what's technically impossible or very, very difficult and expensive to regulate. That's where we'll act as sort of outside experts, because you have to remember we're representing the whole planet, not just the view of one particular government.
Like the latest one that I have attended a meeting, it was under the ISIQWA, UN ISIQWA, and they were trying to develop the law for the, let's say, the Arab region, but all people who were participating developing the cyber law are from the legal point of view. They are not from the technical, the expert part of it. So that's why I'm asking, as I can heavily involve, and at least as an advisory to these communities and these different bodies.
Yes. Patrick?
So one of the things that we've tried to emphasize in conversations where this has come up is that the internet is global, and that the implications of restrictions in one area may have unintended consequences in another region. We work quite a lot on providing education, awareness, and training around DNSSEC, so encouraging adoption of this protocol that makes the internet more strong and resilient for everyone, and reminding either governments or operators that the platform is a global system and it's not broken down by national boundaries.
Thank you. My name is Khao Muso from Botswana. This question may not necessarily only be directed at the team that we have up here, but also to the law enforcement people in the room. The internet is global, right? And then, therefore, cybercrime is also global. How do we handle issues cross-border crime, you know, where somebody hacks into my account from Europe or anywhere else in the world, and I'm sitting in Botswana where there's no real law about cyber crime? How do we handle those issues? And I bank with a South African bank, and I'm living in Botswana, and the crime happens somewhere in, you know, out there in space. Thanks.
Well, I'll just talk about what Narayan was talking about before, which is the one of the first things is the Cybercrime Convention, which I think, did you say you're from South Africa?
Botswana.
Botswana, I'm sorry. But that is something where they're trying to set up global norms and global laws on cybercrime. And actually, yesterday, they actually had the Commonwealth had met, and they were talking about adopting very similar type laws. And I think the African Union also has something where they're trying to adopt cyber laws that are kind of global in conformity. So that's one area. Insofar as a global approach to cybercrime and some of the things we're doing, that's number one. The other thing we're trying to do here is we're trying to work as a global law enforcement community to see if there's changes or recommendations that we can propose that will alleviate the crime or take a more proactive approach to the crime and also have better attribution to crime so it's easier for us to find criminals. I mentioned the Who Is before. That's a global tool, and that's to find domain names and IP addresses and so on and so forth. So that's what we're trying to do. And insofar as I think more directly with your question, I think the cybercrime conventions, and they met here this week, the Commonwealth, I know the African Union has it. Narianne was talking about the cybercrime convention that originated out of Budapest. I don't know if you wanted to talk more about that because you've participated in that. So does that answer your question, or are you sure?
It does, thank you.
Okay.
Chelsea from the Pacific. Just clarification. I think you were saying that ICANN is not there to stop cybercrime. So why are you doing DNSSEC and all that? Isn't that supposed to actually stop people or limit people from committing crimes?
Well, what I mean is we don't have authority. We're not empowered by a nationality to enforce laws.
But the work you're actually doing is to actually try and minimize.
Right. So
we're just essentially stopping people.
Yeah.
From
so we take
crimes.
Another approach since we have to represent everybody on the planet. We're spending a lot of the IETF came up with the DNSSEC standard, and now we're through ICANN through policy. We're trying to implement it and get it adopted as much as possible. And the idea then is right. Make it more difficult for criminals around the world.
Right. It's just the statement when you're actually saying that you're not here, it kind of implies that
so we have to take the
criminals actually run around the internet, which is not the case.
Right, so we take other approaches to try to make it more difficult for criminals everywhere.
Right, the follow-up one is basically on law enforcement. On the transnational nature of cybercrime, when your server is, like, say, in the U.S., there's going to be issues in terms of jurisdictions when you're actually trying to get some data from the U.S. Is that been a discussion point? For example, if I'm somewhere out there in the Pacific and the data that I actually need as evidence on a particular case reside in a server in the U.S., there's going to be some issue in terms of getting access to the data which reside on a server in the U.S. Is that been some discussion on that? I know it's been discussed on the Council of Europe conventions and all that kind of stuff, but on the ICANN realm, has that been something to be considered? Or
from the law enforcement perspective here, no, we haven't considered that here because this isn't an enforcement mechanism. That would be more along the lines of the Cybercrime Convention because that is a treaty which will bind national governments. Here it's because this it's an internet governance bottom-up policy-making organization that hasn't been addressed here. And what we do try to address ad hoc here is something similar to that, you know, like I said, when we came up with our law enforcement recommendations, where we're trying to change, I guess, the environment as opposed to the laws. So that is a way in which we're approaching it because that's the most appropriate way through ICANN.
There is a question of Fatma Cabronero from Argentina. She is a remote participant. The question is, any comment on the recommendations of the SSRRT?
They've completed the report, and it's now in the hands of the board. I will state that. Oh,
Patrick, could I ask you, not many of us know what SSRRD is. If you could just back up one minute.
So this is the report, the final report of the Security, Stability, and Resiliency Review Team, which is one of the four review teams under the Affirmation of Commitments. They completed the report and had 28 recommendations, and thankfully they were very interested in having staff observe and be available to ask questions throughout their effort, their 18-month effort in developing these recommendations. I think all of the recommendations are quite implementable, and we've already made progress to be proactive about implementing many of the recommendations. So we'll be providing the board and the community with our sort of timeline and a dashboard view of how these recommendations will be implemented within ICANN. The other thing to remember is that these recommendations aren't just for staff, but it's for the organization, and it's for how the other stakeholder groups would be interacting and providing and guidance. So they're recommendations for the community that participates in ICANN, not just for the staff that has to support the community.
That's what we're asking everyone for feedback.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that we're asking the community for feedback on, this draft statement of role and remit.
Leon, I think you're next.
Yes, thank you. Leon from Mexico. And, well, pretty much you've answered all the questions I had. So I want to thank you. And one last question. Yesterday I attended a session in which they were asking questions about how to make ICANN relevant and how to push ICANN to a more important position on an influence point of view. Are you reaching out to governments to push best practices and maybe these reports and studies that you are doing for all of us to influence the national laws or go further than just doing these reports and taking them to a global publication site or something like that? Are you trying to push these initiatives to local law to influence local governments?
So we are available to provide guidance if asked. One of the things that we've done is that there's been an effort from ENISA, which is the European Network Information Security Agency, has done cyber exercises and preparedness within the European area. And we've provided some involvement in the exercise development. We've done that within the United States context, where there have been participants from Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and other countries. So from a cyber exercise standpoint, we're available to help develop an exercise and make it realistic and practical and how that might have implications on cybersecurity. Yeah, and one of the other areas is we've had quite a bit of involvement with the Commonwealth Cybercrime Initiative. We're on their steering group. We're provided a platform this week, and through training, we did a training session at Carabnog in Trinidad just a week or two ago before this meeting. We'll be doing more training, and we do quite a bit of CCTLD training around DNS operations and preparedness, attack and contingency response efforts. So I think from an ICANN perspective, we're able to help, and where different groups reach out to us. We've had a number of groups reach out to ask about DNSSEC training. How can we get our basic understanding of what it means to implement this within our country code and within our region? So that's just, I guess, a starting point.
Yeah, just building on that, we in the last couple of months, I've participated in a NATO exercise. Participated with the World Economic Forum, where they have a risk group that's looking at ICT risks, and they're interested in the perspective of global threats to DNS. So we're participating with the World Economic Forum. So a lot of different groups will come to us. Interpol is another group that we have a pretty close relationship with. They're getting more and more involved in cybercrime norms, expected norms of behavior, and so we're providing them with advice. So we'll play with anybody.
I just want to reinforce, and one, you've got an operating plan out for public comment. And so to reinforce the idea that as an individual stakeholder in the ICANN community, of which now stepping through the doors, registering on Saturday and Sunday, you're now part of this community. And it's very important. Public comment, I think, is not taken sometimes as seriously as it should be. And this is your opportunity to step in and say, this is what's important to my region. And one of the things that I can say since being with ICANN since 2007, a year behind Patrick, I think, is that even in the registry department, Patrick has been, for lack of a better word, I'm going to say cheerleader, but that's really not the strong word I should use, someone who has stepped up into the ICANN staff and the executive team and said, we need to step out of our comfort zone and get out there and train. We need to get out there and be, you know, a part of the developing countries. John Crane also really pushing that, and you need to push that. You need to ask for what you need in the $75 million FY13 budget. That's decided now. It's locked in through the vote on the 23rd. That doesn't mean you stop commenting on the work of ICANN. And that means on FY14, you need to make your voice heard now to say, I don't think there was enough. I think that you should spend more money or more resources. We benefit from your voice saying what you need in your community, be it training or, you know, intercession or whatever. So it's really important to get into the website. And the other thing you get from that is understanding what it is that we can and cannot step into. I think a lot of the questions this morning, and I learn every time, you know, I have to sit here and really listen because I realize that my work at ICANN doesn't naturally step into the zone very much. And so I've got to sit here and listen and say, wow, I really wasn't aware of what we do and don't do. And by the bylaws of ICANN, we are constrained into certain things. And you talk about relevance. I think we've become very relevant in the world of security in my 5.5 years here. And I commend the team that's come in and done it. But we are constrained by bylaws. It's just when people say, you know, why aren't you doing something about all the crap, you know, that's going on the Internet? We don't do content. And so we have to, you always have to take a look as a new member in the community, study a bit into this fantastic website that we have. Sometimes cumbersome, you got to drag through a little bit, but look at what we can and cannot do and then comment on it. You know, there's certain things the bylaws aren't going to allow us to go any further, but you certainly are allowed to comment. And if it's not being done, it's only your fault if you haven't stepped in and stepped up.
My name is Brian Gillen. I'm from the Gambia. I just have a suggestion, really. You get a lot of requests on training. I'm thinking maybe a better or more structured approach would be to actually come from the we usually have these operator groups in the different regions, the AFNOG, the Caribbean Operators Group, and during these trainings that we have through a two-week process, you have different African countries coming together. The last one was held in the Gambia in May, and we had 23 different African countries in one sitting. So that would be a good way of actually getting these trainings done and hitting as many countries as possible. So this should be, I think it's a bit more structured than dealing on a organization by organization basis or on a request basis. So it's just a suggestion.
So the Gambia training is a really good example because you may not have known that we did have someone there from ICANN, but that training we don't say is ICANN training. We say that's the AFNOG training, and we're just supportive of it.
But it's a possibility because the training is very technical, so you could have DNSSEC training squeezed in there somewhere. So it's really a possibility, something you should look into because the demand is there.
So long. Oh, yes. Gary Campbell, Jamaica. Well, we all agree. I would assume that cybercrime is becoming more and more of a concern, and more countries are trying to put in place measures to mitigate the impact of it. One such measure is the attempt by many countries to create a CERT. I'm just wondering, because in Jamaica we're actually attempting to do the same thing. Is there a particular role for ICANN, being an international community, is there a role for ICANN in any of this?
So the question is about CERTs. And ICANN's a member of FIRST, the incident response. And so we participate in their group, and we provide advice to other CERTs if they have questions, generally around DNS operations. And we internally operate our own emergency response team, but only for our own operations. So I think there's a role. It's more of as a sort of an observer. What we do is we pay attention to a lot of what the other CERTs are doing and what a lot of the operational security community is doing. And if we see anything that seems to be affecting DNS, for example, we're seeing a lot of botnets and malware that's using these DGAs, these domain-generated algorithms, where they're using pre-computed domain names as a command and control channel for the bots to communicate. And so what we'll do is we will maybe do... for example, we'll work with, say, VeriSign, and then they'll pre-register the DGA domains so the bad guys can't use them to communicate, and then we'll do price forgiveness, essentially, to VeriSign so they don't have to pay us for registering the domains used by the, you know, botnets. So there are ways in which we can operate.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Gary said. Actually, again, coming back to this AFNOC thing, we actually have a CERT training that runs for a whole week. Maybe you should look into the Caribbean NOC. Maybe they have something running during their operators group. So, again, comes back to the same thing. Maybe we should look into actually having this training during that time because they fall into the same category.
Yeah, so 2 weeks before this or 10 days before the ICANN meeting, Carib NOC was in Trinidad, and we had two ICANN staff members, and they did a whole day of... there was DNSSEC training in addition to some DNS basics. So we did have someone at Carib NOC, and I know there's other trainings being planned for with future network operator meetings, and definitely want to continue to do that.
I think we all kind of have the same concern regarding if you say that your group is in charge of make the environment for implementing law, then training is a good start to make that possible, and respecting also ICANN bylaws and their limits, you know.
Yes, just a general comment here. So I'm from the law enforcement. And I've seen that there are a lot of instances working for, you know, at the end of the day, the police, what we are looking for, the law enforcement, is when we go to the WHOIS database, at least we get information that helps us for investigation, right? I'm from the investigative part. I'm a technical person also. I'm the law enforcement for long. And I've seen that through different instances. The SSAC, I've chatted with one of the director for the compliance team also. So we've seen that at the level of ICANN, there are a lot of instances working to get things for those registrants to comply with what they have to give as information. And at the end of the day, the law enforcement is looking forward to have these good data when we have to help the population at large, I mean internationally. Thank you.
Great. I think let's take one more and then we'll wrap up for the morning.
My name is Fyodor Smirnov from Russia. I'm working in the cyber. And I have a specific question on concerning the critical infrastructure of internet. Just want to hear opinion of our security experts. On one hand, we see we are facing a new GTLD program, and the number of TLDs is increasing or will be increased dramatically. And on the other hand, we see such things like cyber war as a concept. We see hacktivism, Anonymous, and things like that. What impact will have recent development on the critical infrastructure of internet, on your opinion? Thank you.
Are you speaking specifically what the impact on the new GTLDs will be on the infrastructure?
Yes, together with other things like that we are facing in the last time.
Yeah.
We are seeing increasing activity of hacktivist groups that we should take into account if we are thinking about stability of DNS.
Yes. 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 It is a big concern. You know, that's why we come here. That's why we're, you know, talking to different people. And I know that ICANN actually did publish a report. I think it was by the RSAC, was it not? The root servers? Yeah, the scaling, because you had DNSSEC, IPv6, the new GTLDs. And there was a concern that all of these things that are going on the internet, you know, would have an impact.
Yes.
But they didn't even consider what, you know, some of the things that you're considering, such as the cyber war, some of the malicious attacks, so on and so forth. And obviously that's putting a great strain. You know, and there were, you know, some concerns. There was a concern about taking a more measured approach into putting all of these things on the internet to make sure that it would remain robust and resilient. So there are concerns, and people are looking at it, and we are concerned, you know, especially with the new GTLDs. You know, we have concerns about the current, you know, status of what's on there already. So when you start adding more means more problems.
Yes.
And we hope that's not the case. And we've worked with ICANN to try to ensure that it wouldn't happen, you know, more due diligence, making sure that people who are going to be new registrars and registries are good people and are going to do the right thing. And we've tried to take those safeguards. So, and we just, you know, fingers crossed that, you know, does happen. And I think ICANN is trying to take a lot of steps to make sure it happens. But we are, you know, engaged and are looking at that. So, yes, it is absolutely a concern, and we are trying to take proactive steps to address that.
Thank you.
At that, I'm going to say thank you. Great questions around the table. And if you have any other questions for Jeff, Patrick, or Bobby, pass them through my email, and I'll make sure I get them to the gentleman here. Again, as we tell everybody, we're all busy in the hallways, but if there's something and you can catch them, they will certainly let you know if they're on their way somewhere and can't deal with it now, but to do a face-to-face. But thank you all very much for coming here this morning. This was excellent. Mohammed, well, I'm going to wrap up the session to let the GAC get started, but if you'd like to introduce yourself in the meantime, that would be great. And then everyone, we're going to exit, and please keep get your areas cleaned for the GAC to be able to step up to the table. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Janice. So my name is Mohammed Diop. I'm from Senegal. I'm also members from the selection committee. And I'm running a registrar, and one of the questions related to what you have already heard the whole morning regarding this law enforcement process is a critical issue that you really have to think about it, how you're going to sort it out, because registrar is the official interface from ICANN perspective to the registrant in the different area, and the lack of these different infrastructure in developing countries is really a blocking point in order to implement the recommendation that have been raised and discussed this whole morning. So I'm ready to discuss any of these issues that you want to talk to. It's very hard to go through the process of becoming a registrar. And for people who get interest in becoming a registrar in the region where you are, so feel free to talk to me, and we're going to see how we're going to help in order to achieve what you want to do. So.
Thank you, Mohammed. And again, I wasn't sure because I'm sorry, I turned my back a minute. Mohammed is a member of our fellowship selection committee and was a member of the ICANN board previously and part of the local host committee for Senegal. So anytime you want to tap in for some information. Have a great day, everybody, and welcome to the GAC.
open?
Hello. Hello. How are you? Yes, indeed, at the OECD. You remember? Some time ago. Thank you for inviting us.
Did you send me an email that had all the agendas for the day?
Yeah,
all of it. And I'm trying to get into my computer. I saw it on my phone, but it's not on my phone anymore.
Kirsten Baxter from the CERN.
Hello. Oh,
that's great.
I understand we have some conversations we should have with like one of our staff.
By you.
Good morning.
This is
my name is Bo. I'm from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
I see it. I'm here. I don't know why it just tripped my phone.
Okay. Hello.
Hi, Jean.
How are you?
When did you arrive?
Actually, I arrived on Saturday afternoon, and I already attended Sunday session. Yeah, but I said, yeah, because I didn't hear any reply from you. So.
Oh,
so I didn't come to.
Did we send you a letter?
No.
I think we did. Jeannie's nodding. We have sent you a letter, but if we need to resend it, Jeannie can give you a copy.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yes, you're very welcome. I'll give you my card.
So I would like to introduce my colleague, Mr. Tuong, who will be on the native during the teaching.
Great.
We used to with ICANN, but this is my first time with ICANN.
The
ACL itself.
Yes.
So
that's good. Because, you know, it really is a challenge when you're at your first meeting. There are so many meetings happening, and how the process works, you know, it takes some time, but you have a good advisor and also a number of colleagues in the committee have been participating for some time. So you can always get guidance from them as well about issues related to the committee, how we work, and so on. Have you met Lim Chun Sai from Singapore?
Liang Ben Tang.
Lim Chun Sai. He is the vice chair from Singapore.
Maybe let me see if I can realize.
Which one?
Okay. Yes. So
maybe you know each other.
Yeah, he's the first one.
As he's the vice chair.
I can't.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was doing that. The
Nicola.
I think is
about the committee and participating. And I'd be happy to introduce you if you have not met before.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
I know, that was the problem.
And I will put your presentation up shortly.